And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast.
This week it's brought to you by our friends at
Kestrel GTX Magnatec. Instant protection from the moment you start. And you know, that's the funny thing is we take our motor oil for granted. And, you know, you really should take care of your car because it takes care of you, gets you to and from work and parties and stuff.
Parties
and stuff. No, serious, man. A lot of people don't think about it. I'm one of those guys, when I can, I will start my engine. And I'll just let it sit for a couple minutes to let the oil circulate and just kind of get the, you know, warm up and do all that. And then you drive it.
Are you the guy who, when you're backing up, do you shift to drive on the while the car's still rolling a little bit? Or do you complete stop and then put it in gear?
Complete stop.
I try to.
Yeah, you have to.
No, you don't have to. Sometimes they're kind of geared to where you can do that.
No, you have to.
I mean, you have to. Yeah.
You have to. You must. So again, thank you, Kestrel GTX Magnatec, for sponsoring the podcast this week. We do have something cool. Before we get into everything, what we did is on Monday on the radio show, we had U.S. Army vet, double amputee, Noah Galloway. He is the men's health ultimate guy for the past year. He is the first amputee to ever get the cover. He's the first United States military vet to ever get the cover of Men's Health. And then, he, of course, is the stud from Dancing with the Stars. He did that amazing American soldier routine. And he was on the show with us Monday. He was in the studio. And we decided, since so many people have asked us to share that interview again, we're going to put it at the end of the podcast. So that's a little bonus for you.
Yeah. Or you can just completely just fast forward to it now and listen to it. But if you do, you're going to miss this awesome joke I'm about to tell.
Okay.
A man and woman are in a bad car accident. They're completely demolished. And they both get out. They're unhurt. And the girl says, "Oh, this must be a sign from God. We're together. We're alive. We should probably live together in peace for the rest of our days." The man says, "I agree with you completely. It's a sign from God." Woman says, "And look at this. Here's another miracle. My car is completely demolished, but this bottle of wine did not break. Surely God wants us to drink this wine and celebrate our good fortune." She hands a bottle to the dude. The guy says, "You know what? You're right." He drinks half the bottle, hands it back to the woman. She declines and says, "No, thanks." And he says, "Aren't you going to have any?" And she says, "No, I think I'll just wait for the police." So you would have missed that joke if you had fast-forwarded.
That was a joke?
Yeah.
That's like one of those things my mom forwards me.
From Guidepost?
Yeah.
Guidepost, I mean, or what's the other one?
BuzzFeed. Dude, if I have one more BuzzFeed thing pop up in my feed, I'm like, oh. Although their videos are pretty good. I started following them now on Facebook, the BuzzFeed videos video page. They have some pretty good ones on there. They have a lot of the same stuff you see everywhere, but...
I'm a sucker for what was the other one I read the other day? It was on Facebook. It was the list, you know, the 12 things that your husband wants you to stop doing right now. And I read that one.
Were they accurate?
Yeah, actually, they were pretty good. Just kind of go off the top of my head, it was like stop thinking that your way is the only way to do something. Don't embarrass him in front of other people. Like, don't talk down to him when he's, you know, when you're out and about with other people.
Right.
Don't nag him. Give him some space.
See, I actually told Stacy she has to nag me. I'm like, if you don't, then I will drop the ball.
Okay. All right. Well, whatever. There's a difference in nagging and reminding, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's reminding you.
I tell her, just remind me constantly.
It's little things that people do sometimes. You know, it's like I was at a party, a get-together or something, a social setting. And a husband and wife are there. And
is this a joke from Facebook? I was at a social setting.
So there's a priest. They're golfing. And you know the type, like you see the type of woman, she's passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like she
kind of strong willed.
But not all the way. Right, right.
Just kind of like not enough to where you go like you could immediately write them off. You know,
right.
You kind of let them. They're smart because they know that they can't be a complete witch because people will write them off.
I know dudes like that too, though.
Oh yeah, it's the people. But this is in this situation, it was the wife, and the guy couldn't be any meeker. I mean, he's going to get the world.
He will inherit it.
He's going to get it, man. And he couldn't be any nicer. But she just ran all over him. And he's telling a story, and then all of a sudden, she just hijacks his story. That's a story about him growing up.
Let him finish his
own
story. It's
his story.
Yeah.
And she hijacks his story, and he goes to talk, and she
kind of shushes him.
Put her hand up.
Oh.
In his direction, like a child.
Like, let me finish. I'm on a roll here. I'm about to get to the punchline, bae.
And I, you know, me.
Yeah.
I was like, and Kathy looks at me with that, please don't say anything.
Shh. She puts her hand up.
And the guy, shut up. And I was like,
wow.
Listen, man, you know, people live all, what you do at your own house, it's your own thing, man. If you've got, she's going to lead your household, that's fine. You know, if that's the way you guys are going to do it, it's not the way it goes at my house. And it's not like I rule with a iron fist or anything, but you got to have, somebody's got to lead. And you got to be, if you're going to be the leader of the house, you need to be able to do it with love, not with that passive-aggressive attitude-y thing, you know? I don't know. It bothered me.
Saw a great joke on Twitter just now.
Yeah?
Because I was going to try to top your joke. Because that's what guys do, by the way.
I can top that joke.
Guys.
Dude, how?
Guys are toppers. Ladies, you know exactly what we're talking about. Your guy, when you're watching your guy with his friends around, you're like amazed. I'm sure you are, because one guy will say something funny, so the next guy will say, oh yeah, well my car does this. And then the next guy will go, yeah, well my car does this. Then the other guy will go, my truck does this. And everybody tries to get theirs better. Guys are just naturally toppers. However, I don't think this one can be topped.
All right, go ahead.
This is from Ben. He says, at Big D and Bubba, describe myself in 3 words. Lazy.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome.
Pretty good joke.
That's a great one.
Not bad. Not bad. I like how he did that. What do you call a bear with no teeth?
What?
Gummy bear.
Oh! Are we about to just go through Twitter and just see what great jokes are out there?
No. No. parallel lines have got so much in common. It's a shame they'll never get to meet.
Aww.
Anyway.
I just Googled Twitter joke, and this is terrible.
Go ahead.
I'm not doing these. They're that bad.
So do you know what you're getting for Father's Day?
I already got it.
You get the gun?
The gun, yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's good for about 300 yards.
Hey, speaking of guns and shootings and stuff, this shooting in South Carolina is horrendous and awful. It made me think, though, did no one, I guess the investigation is obviously still going on, did no one had a gun? You guess that you can't carry a gun into the church? Or I know people at my church, like, yeah, you're not supposed to have a gun legally.
I know five people
at my church have guns.
Yep.
And
I'm totally cool with it because I know them and I trust them and I know that they're, you know, going to protect us if some kook comes in like that.
You're right. And, it's going to be debated forever.
Right.
I know, Bubba. It's going to be debated forever that whether or not you should have a gun at a school, on property, a park, a bar, a restaurant.
The thing is, the argument is anytime you have a gun-free zone, that's the first place somebody with a gun wants to go in because they know that they're going to be able to get out of there without getting shot.
Yeah.
Because they're cowards. Look, anytime you have somebody who goes and picks up a gun for practically no reason, and, you know, decides to take other people's lives and then flee. Well, they're a coward. They're a coward from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
they want to go to these gun-free zones. That's their whole idea.
Don't kid yourself that they don't think about that. Of course they do. They've thought it all out. They've probably been thinking about it for a decade.
Yeah.
Of how they're going to do this. You know, that that thing starts up in them, whatever the sickness or the delusion or the voices, whatever it is, and it starts growing and they start planning and it gets in depth. That's, you know, from what I've studied and what I've seen on NCIS, that's the way it goes.
I saw somebody who said, the whole idea of, why let only the I wish I knew how they phrased it, because it was on Twitter. It was 140 characters and it was much better than I'm about to do. But they're like, hey, I think the best idea to defend yourselves against crazy people with guns is not to let them have guns in the first place. And that kind of thinking, I get it. I understand it. But it's just not going to happen. There are about 3 to 315 million guns out among the American populace right now as we speak. The bad guys are going to always have a way to get their hands on guns. There's always going to be, if you outlawed guns, there would be a black market and it would go crazy.
Yeah.
And those guns would go directly to the people who don't need that gun. Let me tell you, if my guns were available, I could make a lot of money on a black market kind of situation. A lot. And there's a lot of people who struggle, and there's a lot out of those 300 million guns. There's a lot of people who would gladly sell their guns over the dark web, the dark net, or whatever you want to call it, to somebody or maybe even somebody in town. So that argument of, you should just rally up and get all the guns is never going to work. So absolutely, I believe that you should arm the law-abiding citizens. There's a whole reason why.
Now, what do you think about the guy who went to the, I think it was the Atlanta airport, and he had his gun on, I think it was on a shoulder holster. Very obvious. It was displayed.
All right.
And it might have even been a, like an MP5 or something like that.
Okay.
Something that looks.
Looks very menacing.
Menacing, yeah.
Right.
And he walked in and was approached, for good reason, I think, by police and security and said, what's up? And he says, well, I have a permit to carry this, and I can carry it this according to the law on the grounds here at the airport. And he legally was right. But you got to use common sense here. I mean,
was he trying to prove a point?
Yes, he was trying to prove a point. And that's what he said. He goes, I'm trying to prove a point. This is my right as an American, and this is, I'm following your law.
I think that kind of stuff backfires because it makes you out to be a kook.
A kook.
And then guess what they're going to do? They're going to try to take everybody's guns, and then nobody can have them.
Thank you.
Except for the bad people that we just discussed a minute ago that get their hands on the 300 million guns that are out there.
I mean, yeah, I know. I hate it. I hate seeing those kind of stories because it. Listen, if you're a carrier and you you've gone through the course, you've gone through the classes, you've done the background
checks. We like
checks,
you. We love you.
But we don't need to know who you are.
We don't we don't want you to advertise that you have it.
That's the whole point of having it, because if you have it on you and it's a scene, or you make a big deal how you're a carrier and
like the people going into restaurants and all that kind of stuff and they've got their shoulder slings on. And you're like, stop it.
Stop.
You're messing it up.
You're screwing it up, man. And, you make the rest of the gun owners look kooky. I know it's your right. I got it. I understand that. But you be smart. And then the other thing is, something does happen. You know what? You're the first one's going to get tagged. Pop.
Because they know they know who to stop.
You always hit the biggest dude in the bar first.
Yep.
That's the same thing. Well, you take him out, everyone else just kind of, who's else going to stop you?
Yeah, that's true.
So what other world issues can we solve?
Let me get on here and see what's up. What about China? What do you think we should do about them, man?
I don't know, bro. What's going on with China?
They're just, you know, trying to stretch their empirical arms and take over the Philippine Sea. And,
yes, they're just doing their thing, man.
Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah, well, we need to be strong, and we need to, you know, do a little flexing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to send a couple of fleets over.
Well, we've kind of been flexing for
a while. Show our rail gun off.
Oh, yeah.
Throw a truck into the ocean and go, oh, we can do this with a truck. Can you imagine what we can do with other things with this rail gun? And then go, hey, how are you guys?
Oh, Lord. What about Russia? Have you seen what they're doing? And people are like, why are you talking about world things? Russia's been doing the same thing. They've been buzzing all of our ships and things like that. And I just want to smack them.
We saw Sweden wants to join the NATO. And they said, if you join NATO, you have a good, very high possibility of military action from us.
From Russia?
Yes. I'm thinking, well, that sounds like they should probably join NATO because then they'll have some protection because you just said you're going to.
They have protection anyway, dude. You know that. You know that.
God, we'll go into anything. Anybody who's being bullied, we'll go in and.
That's what we do, though.
That's what we do.
That's what we have done for a century plus now. And, you know, that's one thing. We've turned into that's our responsibility.
I don't like it.
I'm not defending everybody.
I'm not a fan of us being the policemen of the world.
But here's the thing. There are certain situations that I absolutely believe America should be involved in.
If it's important to us.
Right. Well, the problem is the world, everything in the world nowadays is important to us.
Yeah.
And that's where you have a weird little quandary of which ones do you pick and choose from? Which ones are important? Which ones are not? If you ignore, let's say, Yemen, and Yemen says, why don't you show us some love like you showing the Saudis love? And then all of a sudden it becomes this thing. So we have to show everybody love. And that's crazy.
Some of these people are always like, we went in into the Middle East because of oil. So, yeah, okay, we did. I say it's part of the spoils of war.
You know,
we get the oil.
And we didn't really get a lot of that
we
oil.
We didn't get a lot because it made us look bad.
Yeah. I think here's the thing is I think personally, this is Bubba talking, if somebody has just come up with in the back halls of their little science lab somewhere, In Sweden, let's say, in Sweden, and they've just gone ahead and created the one thing that will power the world for the next 500 years, like, you know, oil nowadays, but they've got the next oil, and it's awesome. Well, you know what? I bet every single country in the world would be figuring out a reason to take over Sweden so they can have control of this thing. That's the way it is. That's what wars are fought for.
Yep.
You know, it's in every oil has been an oil a war for oil. The reason Japan went into Pearl Harbor was to hit us where it hurt. And they screwed up because they didn't get the fuel dumps. They didn't get all of them. And that allowed us to rally.
Rally! I like watching I love watching all the old war documentaries and see World War II in color. Okay. Well,
they're great when they are in color. I hate when they're colorized. You know what I'm talking about? The ones where they're like color, and then you look at it and you go, this just doesn't look right. And then you go, oh, yeah, okay, this looks like it's colorized.
Painted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell the difference. I don't care, though. I'm fascinated by the whole German World War II thing and how that, you know, the rumors of them having alien technology and.
They got that bell.
What's the big
time
bell?
Travel bell?
What's that big thing for?
What is this for? It
why
looks
was
like Stonehenge.
There? Yeah. Well, why is it there?
Well, because they had alien technology. Duh.
I mean, I can't explain it.
You can't explain it?
I can't explain it. It's all crazy. It's a loco. I'm working on Spanish.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So very interesting. This is going to be a little goofy thing. You know, facial recognition is the future. That's part of, everything that's going on in the world, right? Because, you know, you take pictures and Facebook will automatically tag you and all that kind of stuff. Well, apparently, They're saying that privacy laws are being challenged because whenever you agree to be on Facebook or Twitter and all these different things, when we click that, yes, we're part of this little social thing, Facebook technically kind of owns our face.
What?
Because of the way it works, your face is like a fingerprint, right? I mean, that's what it is, facial identification and all that. Well, their face prints have been, I guess, the wording is written in Facebook's favor to where technically they kind of own your face.
Well, I mean,
that's a weird situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all... Facebook and Google and Apple, it's getting kind of crazy, man. It's a lot of power in these few companies because we're all using the same products. We're all using the same thing. And when you have that kind of power, think about how much power Facebook has.
Yeah.
Think about how much power...
Well, think about all the stuff they turn over. I mean, you know, that they don't tell us about. They've got facial biometric data. All these pictures we've uploaded and said, yes, that's me. Yes, that's me. Go ahead, tag me. Now they've got location data, biographic data. They know all of our friends. I mean, you can quickly, you know, have all the surveillance you need on somebody just by cutting a deal with Facebook. And don't you think for a minute now that the government doesn't have a little deal with Facebook?
You're right.
And all of those. And it doesn't matter what the social thing is. It's kind of a catch-22 because we all love social media. We're on Snapchat. We got Instagram. I got this. I got that. And all this awesome stuff. But the weird thing is we're just turning over way too much information. And I, by the way, am probably the guiltiest of it. I think it's great whenever my wife and everybody tags me in pictures that I didn't know I was in. I love that. I'm like, oh, that's a cool picture.
Well,
this is a different podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But, well, you know, we'll
can we go back to the Twitter jokes?
So this guy, this string walks into the bar. Says, hey, I want a drink. Guy says, we don't serve strings here. Get out of here. String says, okay. He leaves, goes outside, ties himself up, messes his hair up, goes back in, says, hey, didn't I tell you we don't serve strings here? He goes, hey, I'm not a string. I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not.
I thought you were making this up as you went.
Sounds like
I really thought you were making this up. I'm going, okay, when's it going to fall apart? When's it going to
fall? When do the wheels fall off?
Afraid not. Oh, I see where
afraid not.
Oh, Lord.
Well, maybe we should get out of the way and let a true American hero talk.
And I'll tell you, we apologize for this week being weak. It's just we've been tired. Patrick's been on vacation. We've been having to carry his weight, which, you know,
it's like 330 or
very
something.
Very substantial. So that was a Twitter joke, by the way. You caught that, right?
Yeah,
that was nice. So we've been doing his job and our jobs. And, you know, we're just tired. It's been a crazy week. And my dog got mauled.
By your own dog, your other dog.
By my own dog. If you didn't see the pictures and all, I put them up on social media, and now Facebook owns my dog's face. And
did you ever take a picture of the eyeball hanging out?
No, you know what Olivia did on Snapchat, and she put it in her little My Story thing, and I forgot to get her to save it and send it to me.
Was it like dangling?
It was like, yeah. I mean, it was out.
How far?
I mean, it wasn't dangling like, you know, like I said, it wasn't looking like a slinky going. It wasn't that, but it was popped out. I mean, it was like
it was bulged kind of.
No, not even bulged. It was out. It was just barely being held in place is kind of the way it was.
Did it have like little vein things attached to it?
Yeah, it was crazy. You got to, my kid, I think that's why Frankie freaked out. My son was like, ah! Because it was like a real eyeball, you know, and he was like, what?
Yeah, I'd freak out.
I felt so bad because she couldn't blink with that eye. Like, she kept wanting to blink it. You know, you get something in your eye, you just blink. And imagine when your whole eye is out. She was like, just Yeah, she was in a weird state that day.
That stinks.
We took her, just a little update for those of you who may not know what's going on. She got in a fight with our own dog, our bigger dog. He snapped at her, popped her eye out of the socket. We had to go run at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, run to the emergency vet. They put the eyeball back in, relieved all the pressure, took all the fluid out, and sewed it up, and then... we're hoping here in a week that we find out some good news that the eyeball has not, you know, begun to deteriorate and that she can keep it in her body. You know, once that eyeball dies, once it goes into necrosis, then you got to pop it out and, you know, sew the whole thing up or whatever they do. So we're just hoping she can keep her eyeball. We're not really expecting her to ever get vision back in that eye, but at least it'll look right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're hoping for right now. The pictures are pretty sad. If you see her photos on Instagram or Facebook or any of that stuff or Twitter, you'll know what we're talking about. It's like you feel bad for her. I had to go and cut her hair even more yesterday. Like, you know, they shaved it at the hospital when they did the surgery, the little vet hospital. But I had to go back yesterday because there was all these loose hairs. You know, she's a Yorkie and they've got all this hair. And it was going into the eye and then it was like, drying there, so I had to go and remove the hair from her eye, and it was pulling on it, so I'm having to not have her bite me as I'm pulling the hair dried to her eye. Oh, it was such a terrible thing.
Tell me more. This is great.
Okay. Well, you can follow along with that on social media. Thanks again to Castrol GTX Magnatech. Instant protection from the moment you start. Definitely lube up your motor with some Castrol GTX Magnatech. And now a really, really awesome interview from Monday. And thanks a lot for listening to this week's podcast.
Hey, Noah Galloway is joining us in the studio. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Of course, American hero. A war veteran.
Dancing with the Stars veteran.
By the way, I noticed that your fiance says stud muffin a lot on Facebook about you. Have you noticed that? Did you know that?
Well, I mean, I've really tried to beat that into her head. Oh, so yeah. She would call me something.
No, do you mean stud muffin? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Stud muffin.
Well, I've got a shirt that has, it says stud that has a picture of a muffin on it.
Oh, that sounds
like I wear all the time.
I have like one that just has a muffin.
Just a muffin?
It doesn't say stud on it. It just says, look, here he is.
This guy looks like a muffin.
You are what you eat. Hey, you know.
So, man, tell us your story for those who don't know. Take us back.
Yeah, so, well, I was going to school at University of Alabama at Birmingham. That's where I'm from, down in Alabama. And it was 2001 when September 11th happened. And I dropped out of school, enlisted in the Army, was stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and was in the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003.
Now, did you join because of 9/11?
Yes. I considered the military on and off, but was never really sold on the idea of it. I have a lot of military in my family. My mom was always pushing me to join the military, but I just didn't know if I wanted to do that. And it was that moment, that morning, that when I saw that second plane hit and I watched, you know, because remember the reporters were all, this was a mistake. And then when that second plane hit, we all started to figure out, no, this was no mistake.
Yeah.
And I went for a run. And while I was running, I thought about it and I was like, no, this is what I need to do.
Well, we talked about that, and we're like, man.
What, running?
No. We never, you know, it's just, I think that's so great that, anyway. So, anyway.
There were a lot of great people who did that yes. on that day and in those following
yeah.
weeks.
Yeah, when I went in, like, there's 3 days of in-processing. It took 3 weeks because there were so many people that came in before you could even start basic training.
Yeah.
So, it took a while. It was 3 weeks of just sitting and waiting. And then basic training started. Then I went through jump school, then was stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And from there, I served under General Petraeus. So we were part of the lead invasion into Iraq in 2003. And at that moment, I decided this is all I want to do. Like the military is a career. I don't want to do anything else.
You fell in love with it.
I did. And, you know, did that entire deployment, came home after a year. We prepped, got ready, went on my second tour in 2005, put us in southwest of Baghdad, the Triangle of Death. And about 3 months into it, was driving a Humvee, hit a tripwire, went off, don't remember it, woke up 5 days later on Christmas morning at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and it was news to me for my mom.
So wait, that, one day you were in the Humvee, and the next thing you know, you're waking up at Walter Reed.
Yeah, I just woke up, didn't know where I was, how I got there. It was just as my parents were walking in.
Wow.
And then it was, you know, my mom at my bedside that said, you know, you've lost your left arm above the elbow and your left leg above the knee. My mouth was wired shut because my jaw was shattered. Had serious injuries to my right leg that was still there. So it was a lot to cope with and deal with.
Hey, Noah Galloway is joining us in the studio. We're just talking to how after 9/11, Noah joined the military, went over, was in his second tour, and then had an IED injury with his Humvee. By the way, I'm looking at the picture of the Humvee. It's toast.
Yeah, was, you know, I'm assuming it's the picture where they pulled it out of the water because it was in the canal.
When they
pulled me out, because you can see the water line on the back door. I mean, it was up. They said it was up to my chest, and I was unconscious.
Yeah. That's crazy. And so you woke up. That happened. You don't remember it.
Not a thing.
You wake up in the hospital. Your mom and dad are walking in. They're telling you, well, your left leg below the knee.
Above the knee.
Above the knee, and your arm.
Left arm above the elbow.
Is gone.
Yeah. Didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I'd go through these phases. I mean, within a minute's time frame, I was like, this is fine. I can handle this. Next minute, I'm crying. The minute after that, I'm just angry. I mean, I was going through these emotions one after the other. Of course, you know, I'm on all kind of medication.
And you also couldn't talk at the time because your mouth was wired shut.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have a conversation about it.
No, it was miserable. I left Walter Reed and moved back to Birmingham. And that's where the real depression set in, where I was in this denial, where I was telling everybody I was fine, everything was okay, and I would just drink and sit around at the house for days sometimes. I remember one time I went to a gas station down the road and I walked in to buy more beer and cigarettes. And I jokingly said to the, you know, attendant, I was like, this is the first time I left the house in 6 days. Cause that's just the world I was living in. Then I'd go out and everything was fine. And then I'd hit this, it was a constant roller coaster of emotions. And I went through that for a few years until finally one day I decided, I have three young kids and I felt like I wasn't being a very good father. You know, I wasn't mean to them, but I wasn't there for them emotionally.
Yeah, you were totally disconnected.
Yeah, exactly. And I decided fitness was always something I enjoyed. So I decided to get back in shape and joined a 24-hour gym, started working out at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I had to find new ways to work out. I couldn't find anything that said, how are you going to work out missing arm or leg?
I was going to say, the machines or whatever. I mean, I don't know if you were doing free weights or machines, but none of that's set up.
No. In fact, I use an ankle strap on my residual limb on my arm to work my chest, my shoulders, my back. I'll either run or I'll even get on a treadmill and walk, you know, with an, you know, incline, you know, it'll work my left leg. And then I can do things with my right leg where I'm, you know, squats, things like that. So I started getting into shape and started doing races, started doing Tough Mudder races, 12 miles per course races. I've done a Spartan Death race, which was 58 hours long. I started just doing all these things I could come across.
Just to push yourself.
Yeah. And that gained attention. The next thing I know, I made the cover of Men's Health. I was on it last November, first amputee.
Well, you had a pretty nice transformation, too.
Yeah.
I mean, By the way,
did you notice the picture? Have you seen the picture, Bubba?
Yeah, the transformation. He wasn't that bad before.
No, he wasn't.
He just wasn't ripped.
Yeah, and then the after picture, did you notice he's got his, like he can't, like, have regular shorts. He's got the shorts where they kind of dip down in the front so you can show that.
Yeah.
What's that weird thing that skinny people have? That weird muscle that goes into your...
It's like the little pointy arrow.
Yes. I got that. All I have is a roundabout. You've got a direct arrow.
Get off at the third exit. Good luck.
So anyway, you get back. You're coming out. This is getting you out of your phase, out of your haze. You're clear thinking.
I love to promote fitness because it was huge for me. It really got me out of that depression.
In a way, it kind of saved your life.
It did. You know, and I'm really close to my three kids. And, you know, once I got back into shape, I had more energy. I could do more with them. And even when I made the cover of Men's Health, like, they were excited. Like, they're walking around school carrying the magazine. Like, this is my dad. Yeah. And it was amazing, you know, to have that opportunity to be, I'm just the world's largest men's magazine. And I was the first amputee, first veteran, you know, to be on the cover. They named me their 2014 Ultimate Guy.
That's so cool.
It was amazing.
Was Dancing with the Stars harder than some of these grueling races that you did?
Dancing with the Stars, for me, physically was challenging because I have one arm, one leg. But I've never danced before, not a single step. So mentally challenging is where it came in. And it was nonstop. I never took a day off. Like, one day, you know, anytime I flew back to Birmingham, my dance partner would go with me. because we would always rehearse. And like one day I went on a field trip with my 7-year-old. That meant that we rehearsed all night. We never took a day because we only had a week for her to come up with a dance, you know, a concept, teach me the dance, and then us perfect it before we dance in front of 15 million viewers on Monday night. So, I mean, that was a little bit of pressure.
Did you get correspondence, you had to, from other soldiers who've been through similar things?
You know, the great thing about Dancing with the Stars, I mean, there's a lot of great things that came out of it, but it gave me a bigger platform, just like the cover of Men's Health. And when I was on Dancing with the Stars, I danced to Toby Keith's American Soldier.
Which made everybody cry.
It was, you know, it got the most views of any video in Dancing with the Stars history.
Like, and you're talking about on the internet afterwards?
Yes.
Yeah, because I saw it. It was everywhere on my Facebook feed for weeks.
Yeah, Jindro Odinero shared it. I mean, all these different people were just posting it. And I got the response from veterans was incredible. It touched people in a way. Because even in the video that played before I danced, I'd mentioned that the biggest mistake I made during my depression was I didn't open up to anybody. I was an idiot for that. And I started getting, you know, responses from other veterans that were like, yes, we should open up. We should do more. We should do more with each other. And that's one thing that I stress all the time to veterans is like, you got to call your buddies you served with, you know, even just a chit chat. I'm connected via Facebook to a lot of guys I served with, but now I'm like, no, I need to always be talking to them. But I feel like if we're always talking, if something comes up, we can help each other better than anybody else.
Yeah. And there's a lot of soldiers who listen to the show, and a lot of spouses of the soldiers who also are having to go through it kind of as well. Because they don't know.
Kind of, for sure.
Sure. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say, what not to say.
Yeah.
What are the hot spots? What do you say? And so it really is like walking through another landmine emotionally when they come home. And so what are some places that they can get help?
The VA, I mean, there's a lot, you know, the VA needs its improvements. But you can, linking into the VA, there's, you know, the DAV, there's all these different programs that are there for us. And I feel like as veterans, if we want to complain about the VA, well, then go be part of it. That's what I do. And like me personally, like I've got different organizations I've found that I love. Operation Enduring Warrior, work with injured veterans. I've done races with them because it's the fitness side. You know, them, Team Red, White, and Blue, all these different groups that it's about the fitness. And for me, I mean, that's where my heart is in the fitness because it saved me. And these are programs where it's getting guys out, working as a team, doing things, and getting back into shape, because I feel like a lot of times we do end up over-medicating. Whether we do it to ourselves or a doctor's doing it or self-medicating with alcohol. And when you get back into shape, it's hard to do those things.
Yeah.
So it motivates you and it keeps you moving.
Well, man, I mean, we can't say thank you enough for your service to our country and doing the things that we couldn't do. And now you're still doing things that we can't do.
Like run. Get skinny. And, yeah.
Where can people follow you real quickly on Facebook? You on Facebook?
Yeah, I have Twitter a Facebook page, Noah Galloway Athlete. You can go to noahgalloway.com, and it links to my Twitter, my Instagram, everything.
All right, cool. We got links on our site as well, Big D and Bubba.com.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.